CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We're live on a Monday morning. Here's me, here's Bulelo. We'll be joined by Leanne Moll in a moment. We can find out where in her garden she passed out over the weekend. We used to have these dogs, right? They were real mutts. Friends of ours gave us two puppies. This is like when we were kids. My brother and I were like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10. And we had these two dogs. They were as tough as nails. They were real farm dogs. Ah, oh, there's Leanne Moll. And I'll never forget, in the middle of winter, my mother used to... She'd wake up early in the morning to wake us for school. And my mom would look for the two dogs. And they'd been lying out on the lawn, right? In the middle of winter, these dogs are tough as nails. The proper outside, the way dogs are meant to be. Not these little preshy things that lie on the bed with you and, you know, get special food that costs $500 a bag or anything.
Allergic to tap water,
exactly. These dogs, they'd be lying on the lawn and there'd be frost all around them, and they'd get up and there'd be a patch where they'd been lying that wasn't frost, because the frost was on them. Mm-hmm. Those are tough dogs. They lasted a long time and they were strong. Jesus, they could run. Wow. Those are tough animals. Yeah. They were really tough. I like that. I think the same is true for humans. You know, all the people who've been, oh my God, Corona, we're all going to die. It's terrible. Obviously, again, I have to caveat this because God knows there isn't going to be someone who's cutting the show to pieces and then finding a piece where I'm, you know, sounding like I don't believe in coronavirus or I'm an anti-vaxxer, God forbid. And then they pass that clip around and then suddenly, you know, some idiot organization like Media Monitors Africa coming after us. So I always have to say, of course, if you've lost someone, and if you've got it and you've been really badly, badly sick, and lots of people have, then I'm not talking about you. But there are those hypochondriacs in society. And I always think of those dogs that used to lie out on the lawn in the middle of winter with frost all around them, and they were fine. Woke up in the morning, tough as nails, could do anything. Ran down to the river at full speed. Could catch rabbits. They could actually catch. You know how fast one of those scrub hares is. These things could catch those. Unbelievable.
So we had a. It really depended on if they were bred dogs. It depended on the breed as well. No. Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a thoroughbred long-haired German Shepherd.
Right.
And he would do exactly that. He would lie on the grass until the frost formed on his back. And he was perfectly happy.
No.
And then we had a Jack Russell who would lie on top of his back for warmth. You know. And then we also had a particularly fussy Staffordshire Terrier, who didn't like his bum to touch the cold cement, so he would sit on a child's lawn chair. So it really depends, you know. But yeah, the Brucks are the hardy ones, that's for sure.
It's the same.
They've got all the herd immunity they need.
And I'm telling you, it's the same for humans. Like, the tougher we are, if you've grown up and your grandparents, your great grandparents, and your great 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 grandparents are all like tough people. They had to fight for a living. They had to survive, eke out an existence. Those people produce good, solid survival genes. And in evolutionary terms, that can't be beaten, right?
There's a flaw, though, in some, even in good stock. I was watching a video last night of a woman who lives somewhere in the north of England.
Mm.
And she's complaining about the heat. And she says, I can't handle this heat in my house. She's like, I'm of northern stock. I'm a woman who was bred to pull potatoes out of the earth, to skin boars.
Exactly.
I just wasn't made for this heat.
No. I don't know how you feel about this, Bulelo, but I know for a fact that whichever ancestors in each line it was that decided, fuck this, we're coming to Africa, those people I'm going to build a monument to one day. I'm going to say those made the right decisions. I would loathe to be in Europe. You know, in South Africa, we have, what, 2-3 months of really bad winter. You know, it's maybe June, July, August that are really, really insufferably cold. But there is no reason you should have to be through put through that misery. And you've been in Scandinavia a couple of times. I mean, I've never even been there. Explain how weird it is that you have a tiny window of sun in the middle of winter of, what, 2-3 hours?
3 hours. So Finland, 3 hours. And I know it varies throughout the Scandinavian nations. So, and even then, it's bloody freezing, by the way. Like unbearably cold for those 2 hours. It's, we're talking, when it gets to wind chill, it's double figure minuses, right? So like centigrade. You are talking freezing cold and just unbearable. But they're just out there being see-through wild, most of them.
Yeah, precisely.
And looking like white walkers and, you know, throwing all the Sven and whoever else it is and Ulrika up in the end.
Bjorn.
Just living their best life.
No, I'm...
But I tell you what they do is because, I mean, our history shapes us, right? So a lot of people wonder why Scandinavia, on a very serious note, is so innovative, because they've had to be. There's a reason why they were ahead in terms of post-agricultural revolution. Everything kind of that the West did came from there, because you've got to be able to store things. You've got to be able to farm and farm properly and have technology.
That's true.
Because you better be able to get into the ground through the snow. So they were really innovative in their history. But they used to have sauna competitions. I don't know if you've ever heard about them. So I remember as a child going to sauna competitions a lot. And it's like serious business, hey? Yeah. It sounds stupid to us, but... like the guy in the village or the lady in the village who is the sauna champ is like a real person to this day. So I remember spending good time there, having a great time, being the only
What do they do?
Guy
so is the game
around.
That you meant to stay in there the longest?
Yeah. Oh. No, it's okay. like serious business. And then they've obviously carved out sort of pools as well, where it's just like, oh, you don't even want to know what the temperature is.
People are
jumping in and out of there, eating food. It's a whole festival.
So they sit in the
but
sauna.
No, winter's a nightmare.
And Finland is famous for saunas, right? So you sit in the sauna for however long you can, as long as you can bear it. And then you jump into an ice pool. And then you jump out of the ice pool back into the sauna. Now, that kind of thing will make you tough, but not the kind of tough I want to be. Sorry.
You know where my kind of limitations of tough are at the moment, I've realized. I tested my thresholds on Friday. Mm. I went for the vaccination, the first one.
Oh, did you get it?
Yeah.
You feel better about it? Wait, now that you've got you feel pleased, that relieved that you've got the first shot?
Purely from standing in a queue point of view and the sore arm afterwards, I'm quite relieved. Mm. But not to put anyone off of having the vaccine, of course, but they do warn you of arm pain, and it's a real thing, people.
Okay, so that's the limit of your toughness right now, is the arm pain from the vaccine.
So, my brother and I went together, and we went on the Friday morning. On the Friday night, he was complaining like a bitch about the pain on his arm.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been punched. I'm like, I felt worse pain. And then I didn't say much once it developed, because you can't even lie on your arm, it's so sore.
Well,
it subsides after 2 to 3 days.
You know, this is actually, I'm glad we got here early in the show, because we can get rid of it quickly, but the number of people I've had to have this vaccination conversation with recently, because it seems to, since people our age and younger are now getting it, because you can do walk-ins in some places.
All over. They're not supposed to turn you away.
So, I mean, everybody's talking about this now. And the amount of just nonsense conversation you have to have with some people. Like, I don't care if you're for it or against it. I really don't care. It's none of my business. I'm not particularly motivated either way. As I've said before, I'm not against the vaccine in any which way. If I have to get it to travel, I'll get it. But I think I've already had coronavirus, so I've already got my immunity, so I don't need to go and get a shot and stand in a queue with a bunch of other people. And frankly, I don't queue. Even if you were giving away bars of gold and there was a queue, I don't think I'd stand in it.
So it depends where you go, but if you go to somewhere like Barra, the whole process takes 5 minutes.
Really?
And then 15 minutes of recovery. So it's very quick.
All right. Let me.
What about?
What about?
People living their best lives. But for a friend of mine last week, like, hey, you want to come over, have some coffee? He sends me photos. The guy's in Ibiza living his best life right now.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, man.
is done.
And he got
we were on the red list.
He got he obviously got his vaccination as he landed or something like that, right? They do.
No, he literally got his vaccine last week. I think also a paramedic, Michael Flex vibe, something
right.
Something, yeah.
Well, good for them. I mean, listen, I want to travel, so I'll do it. But I'm not in a hurry. I'm not looking at planning any travel for the moment anyway. Funniest thing, you know, during all those all the looting and the riots and the craziness of last week, somebody sent me this, and I just thought it was so funny, right? So apparently Eusebius McKaiser, who, by the way, is now doing a podcast. This is the same guy who said podcasts are really stupid, and only people who do podcasts are these alt-right bros. Now he's got his own podcast, this fucking loser. So he was at the Benmore Shopping Center the other day. So look at this. He put this up, you know, when all the ill riots and everything were happening. He's like, I just had to run like hell. Huge commotion at Benmore Shopping Center. Staff and customers scatter. Shops close. And security try to lock entrances into the mall with the sounds of projectiles being thrown. Some shouting. The looters are coming. Is the ANC-run state capable? So then someone sent me this voice note of him. You want to hear it? This is him. He sent this to some friends.
There's trouble at Benmore Shopping Center. Please spread the word. I had to leave my car there, and I'm running home. There's big trouble in Benmore Center. Please tell everybody. Thank you.
No, Eusebius, he sounds a bit different. Sounds a bit different to the last time I heard him.
More what they call yentery. He's got the yenters there.
Anyway, so I thought that was pretty funny. Hey, we've got two things on this morning that I think you're going to enjoy. The first of these is Dr. Hanan, who's back with It's Going to Be Okay. And we've got a really interesting episode precisely about this kind of thing and the anxiety that a lot of people are feeling because of last week. And what's been happening and how many people it's made uncomfortable. I mean, I'm hearing, you know, again, more stories of people who were really rattled by what happened because they've been living in a world where they believed they were, in inverted commas, safe. And that word has come up a lot. So if I may just go into a 2 to 3 minute diatribe here of what I think of safe. The world is not safe. I don't know where anybody got into their heads the idea that you'd wake up in the morning and you would spend every day of your life until you died being, in inverted commas, safe. Safe from coronavirus, safe from angry people, safe from emotional and economic decline and difficulty. I don't know where everybody got this idea. Clearly, the people who believe in safe, in inverted commas, are people who've never picked up a history book. It makes me, it boggles my mind that there are people who are so absolutely ignorant of the history of humanity that they think that safe is a form of existence that's available to us, like on the shopping mall shelf. You can go in, you can pull it off the shelf and go, okay, well, I bought that. Now I'm safe. For the longest...
It is something that we strive... It's something that we always strive for.
Of course,
the human race.
Particularly the purpose of men, of real men in society, and I know I'm going to get shit from people who have a different definition of masculinity and usefulness in society to the definition I'll use. But the purpose, the whole reason men exist is to protect the women and children as much as possible, to try and create as much safety for those women and children as they can possibly do. That's the best thing you can do as a man, right? That is the most valuable contribution you can make as a man, is to give protection to the women and children. Now, having said that, and having said rude things about people who've never read a history book, let me be very, very clear about what history does tell us about safety, is that safety is something we can strive for, and in very many civilized societies these days, it is available more than it's ever been, right? And that's why I've always said, I've been the world's biggest optimist about where we are in the story of humanity right now, because there is more safety available to you than at any other stage. You are living better than any of your ancestors, no matter how well to do they might have been. If you're descended directly from King Louis XIV, who lived in the Palace of Versailles in opulence and luxury in the 1600s, you are not in any way to complain that you're worse off than him. because
you've got clean underwear to start with.
Clean underwear,
you've fresh underwear daily.
Running water, you've got electricity. You don't have to do anything post 6 o'clock at night by candlelight. You have the ability to wash. And you know these
and
the,
poo in a toilet.
Exactly, you have flushing lavatories. Not you don't have to use a bedpan. So stop, please, thinking that anything about today is worse. And oh my God, whatever happened. And I'm by no means again making the experiences of people last week making a mockery of them, because I understand that there are a lot of people who are very traumatized by this. But please go and pick up any history book you choose. Your ancestors, but 3 or 4 generations ago, had no say as to where they were deployed in war by whichever chief, king, warlord, pope, or whoever else was there to tell them what to do. You don't have to worry about that now. So already there are certain things that are not on the table that were just in, they were not even negotiable for your ancestors. Okay, and the fact that they had to go out, chop wood, burn it, and as you said about that woman in the north of England, pull potatoes out of the ground, you know, hunt an animal. This is what our ancestors had to do just to survive every day. If they survived, that was better than safety. Because, yes, a wild animal could come and tear one of your children out of the arms of your wife and eat it for dinner. But there was no illusion in those people's minds that they were going to be safe. You could barricade the cave door. You could build a, you know, some kind of shelter. And just when you thought you'd managed to get yourself safe from the animals, another tribe would come along and murder you just because you were in their way. There's no such thing as safety. So let's all just stop expecting some halo, some blanket of security to be thrown over us. It doesn't work that way. Coronavirus is what nature does. Even if this, in this case, the Chinese have done their bit to help engineer it in a negative direction. Mobs of people have always behaved badly and threatened the security of good, law-abiding citizens. This is how the world works. What kind of lack of appreciation and basically, what sort of lack of gratitude did you grow up with that you thought you deserved to live in perfect harmony and security with everything around you? And that's all I have to say about it, because it's been bothering me all weekend. I've heard lots of really harrowing stories, and trust me, I'm absolutely convinced that those people are going to be rattled for a very long time. It'll be something that they'll think about for the rest of their lives. But please don't think for a minute that because you've gone through it, you're the first human being to go through it, or that what you've gone through is worse than what your ancestors had to go through on a daily basis. It makes you sound extremely ungrateful. Anyway.
I'm glad to hear what you've said. And I think a lot of it obviously makes absolute sense, and it's factual. You know, it's just difficult to express an opinion in these times without facing backlash, which I think is another threat to our safety on its own. Well, our safety in being able to express our opinion.
Well, these days that is a very it's a very dangerous place to be. Probably one of the most dangerous things you can do right now is to express yourself honestly, because people don't like it.
Yeah.
They want you to conform and behave.
And what it's eroding is something that keeps societies together, which is objective truth. But let's not open that.
No, you're right. There's very little of that going on. So here's some interesting.
But it's very dangerous. I mean, I got people who don't even know how to add one and one, and telling me how chemical bonds work, and telling me how the vaccine works.
Oh yeah.
Like I'm a moron. I'm a moron with an undergrad, and I speak to people with PhDs across the scientific spectrum, and I must listen to you who does what?
Yeah.
You did a BA Arts, and you work in a marketing department about vaccines. I'm going to punch you in the face if you don't get out of my face immediately is what I'm thinking. But I don't punch you in the face.
Yeah, but you have to behave yourself, right? Yeah. Well, speaking of all of this, I don't know if you saw this tweet over the weekend. This is hilarious. I just hope this week, that's last week obviously, doesn't inspire South African singers to get together and sing a We Are the World type of song. Please, we're already going through too much. So, I love that. I love that for a number
of reasons. It's already happening, man.
I know. But I saw lots of people tweeting that and going, yes, please. You know, Leanne, Bulela's probably too young to remember this, but when we were kids, they would always play We Are the World when terrible things were happening. You know, like there'd be a landslide in Bangladesh that would wipe out like six villages and there'd be people buried under rubble. And then you'd see them playing We Are the World and you think, oh, no. Even as a child, I went, oh, God, it's that fucking song. It means terrible things are happening. There'd be a volcano in Sicily that, Mount Etna explodes and huge chunks of molten lava go up into the air and land on some poor old lady in a wheelchair, and then they'll play We Are the World, Michael Jackson.
And there's bound to be a telethon that follows, telethon.
Do you remember telethons? So then, they've got like Diana Ross and Elton John and Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie and all of those 80s stars who sang in We Are the World. Even Bob Dylan is in the fucking song. And I thought, there's something so disgustingly ironic about Michael Jackson singing, "We are the children." Meanwhile, he's molesting them left, right, and center. And, the 80s, that was what it was. The smoke and mirrors. Unbelievable.
we really did get away with a lot without people even realizing it. Nothing was really put under the spotlight, We just kind of got on with things and...
Yeah. Most people
lighting a packet of poo and putting it on your neighbor's doorstep. That stuff didn't end up in the newspapers.
No, this is what people did for fun.
That's where Gal Gadot didn't get away with it. She thought she'd get all of her friends more money probably than all humans in history together.
Yeah.
Remember at the beginning of lockdown? I think in her mind,
yes,
she thought, oy vey, they're going to name a chabutz after me in Israel because I'm a daughter of the soil.
Gal Gadot, she sang, what did they sing? Imagine, right?
Imagine, she got everyone to sing Imagine, remember, and they did like a montage. I'm pretty sure she thought a kibbutz was going to be named after her and they were going to replace Jesus in the Bible with Gal. That's what she thought was going to happen. She's Israeli. It's going to happen.
Well,
I've united everyone.
I love Gal Gadot, so, she's just very attractive. I like that. I'm very happy.
Hey, Gareth, I met her, and,
You did?
I met her in Cape Town. I don't want to bore you with the details, but anyway, we had, like, a nice conversation. I didn't know who she was, by the way, until a friend of mine told me after the conversation. But anyway, and then she went to the We Are the World thing. Like, she seemed pretty smart, and then I was just like, oh, man,
never
meet your heroes.
She was trying to make her difference with her truth.
Oh, Lord.
The moment people start talking about their truth, or they start saying, well, I da-da-da-da-da-da, but I'm doing the work. I'm always like, oh, God, here we go. This is bullshit right off the bat.
I do my part.
No.
It's interesting that you've said this.
Especially when I used to have terrible attitudes towards the trans community, but now I'm doing the work. I'm like, what is the work? Work should involve some kind of heavy lifting in some way, shape, or form. There needs to be enormous amounts of expenditure of physical and mental energy in order for you to complain that it is work. I don't see any work happening when you adjust your attitude to other human beings or you learn something new and change your mind about a certain set of facts. That's not work. It's just curiosity. That's just change. And that doesn't require a huge amount of effort on your part. Don't claim to be doing any work, please. Anyway.
It's madness. I just want to quickly, before we move on, can people stop asking why celebrities aren't talking about this? It's like, who cares what Trevor Noah has to say about an absolute disaster for people in KZN? Am I wrong here? I don't know if you've had any people. I saw somebody's Facebook status, and I thought, does this person think, man? Why do I want to hear from Trevor Noah when people are suffering? Well, what are we doing?
Well, first of all, let me just say, on this show, hopefully part of the reason that we all get together every morning is because we all want to hear each other's points of view, and that's great. And that's why I love to read the comments every morning, because there's always someone who's got something interesting to say that I hadn't thought about. And our guests are the same, right? That's why we interview interesting people. Hopefully they bring a point of view that you haven't thought of. But I'm so with you, Mbulelo. It doesn't bother me that Trevor Noah hasn't made any public statement about this. Like, who's sitting there waiting for that? Who's lying in bed at night going, oh, my God, I don't know if I can sleep until I know whether Trevor Noah is going to make a comment about KZN this week? Who's that person? I want to meet them. I want to know I want to know whose life is dependent on the point of view of Bulelo or Gareth or Trevor Noah or Leanne or anyone else. You really, then you've got some problems. You need, why not be happy with your own opinion on these things or formulate your own opinion on these things? Like, Trevor Noah is doing a comedy show. The fact that he should ever be taken seriously is a huge stretch. And he's very good at what he does as a comedian and a late night talk show host. If you are looking to him to be your political compass, got problems. It's like Mbulelo was saying just now about all these people who have no scientific qualification, but they'll tell you all about the vaccine all weekend long. You've got problems. Learn to find your information from sources that are valuable and useful to you. Otherwise, you are looking in the wrong places. You're digging for gold where there's mud.
Anyway. Listen, protect your mental health, especially in things that are empirically true. Now, I think I've told you this before. You don't have an undergrad in science. I ask you a few questions and we move on. Stop. I don't want to talk to you. I've done the work, Gareth. I've done the work.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to get involved in my mental health.
Right. Bridget says, I love this. I was lectured the other day about why I should not have the vaccine and how we're all going to die in 3 years. I thought, well, if I don't, I'll be stuck here with all these anti-vaxxers. No thanks. Gee, so I was added to a group. I don't know how. You know, sometimes people can add you to a WhatsApp group without your permission. So it was someone in it's someone in my contact. It's not a complete stranger. But they added me to this WhatsApp group of, like, the most bizarre anti-vax conspiracy bullshit I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, like, they've got a brain, like a human brain, and they're cutting the brain up and they're saying, well, look, if you look inside the brain, this is all because of the vaccine. Just some nonsense, first-rate nonsense.
And there's no way of them knowing, honestly.
That stuff is as bad because, of course, Leanne's correct. We don't know because we haven't done the longitudinal tests yet. Nobody in vaccinology, nobody in immunology knows the answers to this, but they had to develop something for this bloody disease. The fact that they managed to get a whole bunch of these pharmaceutical companies managed to race to the finish as quickly as they did is miraculous. And of course there are going to be side effects and after effects in a small percentage of the population, like with anything. You know, some people are allergic to grass. Some people are allergic to dairy. Some people have a bad reaction to certain plants, for heaven's sake.
Oh, it's like these people who are petrified of blood clots from the vaccine. In the meantime, they've been on the pill for the last 15 years,
which
has a much higher rate of causing blood clots.
Or they weigh 180 kilograms and they're worried about the vaccine poisoning their system. I'm like, come on. What are you talking about, Miss Obesity 2021? You know?
Like, you know, we've cracked the human genome, largely speaking. You are not going to have a third arm in two generations. Like,
well,
don't worry about it. There's people that are smarter than you will ever be at the Large Hadron Collider with deep learning. We're fine.
The machines might outperform us at some very, very near point in the future. In fact, they say, you know, people like Kurzweil and Diamandis and those futurists, they say, oh, it's just around the corner, the singularity. 2023, in fact. So what, 2 more years and computers will outperform human beings?
If there's something that gets the job done better than me, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Well, I
much prefer accuracy, thanks.
Yeah. There's some very funny comments here. The coronavirus is nature's way. This is according to Errol. Coronavirus is nature's way of balancing the world's overpopulated population since there won't be a third world war. That would be nice, Errol, if it was true, but we've only lost it's under 70,000 people in South Africa, so that's not exactly going to change the population dynamics. I don't know what you're talking about. Eleutheria says there's a setting you can change so you don't get added to groups. I've got to find that setting. I'm going to switch that on. What a stupid group that was. Jesus, they were stupid. Tanya says, go to your WhatsApp settings. You can turn that off so you can't be added. You will still get the invite, but you can decline it. Okay, that's good. That's very good. Dexter Fox says, my dad has it bad at the moment with anti-vax. He says it's anti-Christ, and when you get it, you'll have the mark of Satan. It's unfortunate.
Oh, no. Yeah, I thought about it in the shower this morning, actually, that whole book of Revelations and the mark of the beast and being, you know, having a chip inserted under your skin. And then I've seen these videos, and I obviously don't know if they're true or not.
That's right, Leanne. Spread my name.
Where they're using these PET scanners, like scanners to that you go over microchips with if you found a pet that's been lost.
Yes.
And using those on their arms, and it comes up with some barcode.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know.
No, well, the people with magnets.
And again, so what? I'm already counted by the government. I'm already monitored by the government. They know where I live. They know what I buy. They know what political party I voted for.
And they still can't stop a riot. They can't stop an actual threat to the state. So how dangerous are they? I love the way these people who are like massively conspiratorial about the government. And don't get me wrong. I hate the state, right? I think the state is a terrible, terrible instrument to do usually the most useless and terrible things. But I'm very realistic. These people who say, well, it's all about Bill Gates and the New World Order and control and blah, blah, blah. But show me a government anywhere in the world who managed coronavirus properly. And that is proof alone. They had no idea of what to do when this thing started. That should be all the proof you need, is that all of them were like falling over themselves to do the wrong thing. And every time you look to government and people go, well, the government is watching you. The government is this. The government is that. And yet they are so fucking bad at it. Right? Like, you can't have it both ways.
They can't organize soccer tournaments properly. You think they're going to spread a disease?
I mean, either these guys are super genius, brilliant, most manipulative, you know, hive brain, unbelievably, incredibly talented Machiavellian monsters who can do anything at any time. They can press a button and, you know, like switch off your suburb and screw with your world and get into your head and track you with a microchip or zero in the satellites on your movements in your own garden. Either they're that brilliant and the state is just incredibly powerful beyond belief, or they are bumbling, stumbling fools, but they can't be both. And their behavior would indicate to me, especially in a country like ours, where you can see that government don't know what the hell they're doing on a daily basis. That should be all the proof you need that there is no massive... Of course, they're going to try and accumulate power, and they are dangerous in the long run. But they're not very good at being dangerous, even. So can we stop with the conspiracies for a minute? All right, a couple of things in the news. We've just got to look at some news stories quickly that are happening all around us. So there's quite a lot going on. Where should we begin? What is today? It's the 19th already. Oy, oy, oy. It's basically December. What is this? Right?
Summer's here. Yeah,
this is insanity. So, all right, Boris Johnson has reversed his plan to skip quarantine after COVID-19 exposure. This is for him personally. You know, again, you talk about how dumb governments are and the people in governments. So Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Finance Minister Rishi Sunak will both be self-isolating in line with national guidance, abandoning heavily criticized plans to take part in a pilot scheme that would have allowed them to continue working. Now, his finance minister, or health minister rather, Sajid Javid, tested positive for COVID-19, but they've been vaccinated and Boris had it. Right? He had it. Mm. He was in hospital. He almost died. Do you remember? So why is he isolating now? Why isn't
because
he working?
Because he can spread it.
No, I don't think that that's true. I don't think that there's no absolutely...
Of course it is.
Zero evidence that that's the case, Leanne. Zero evidence that that's the case. Hey, this Boris Johnson, I think he just wants another 2 weeks off work. That's what I think it is. It's pure laziness. This isn't about public health. He's lazy. And maybe during these 2 weeks he can actually get his act together and sort out his hair. Cyril Ramaphosa admitted the other day that he'd made mistakes. This is quite a big deal because government never admits that they've ever made any mistakes, let alone individual ministers, and especially not ANC ministers. They never use the word mistake. They say challenges and this kind of thing. You know what I mean? So Cyril reiterated government could have been better prepared in dealing with the recent violence and riots. He was speaking to residents in Meadowlands and Soweto on Sunday. as part of a cleanup campaign. As we've said, there were mistakes here, and there were because we didn't respond in time in a way that we should have, he said. Meanwhile,
well, he said that in his national address as well. Mm. But and it was the first thing that the media jumped on, and it kind of irritated me a little bit because they picked up, the media did, on that one thing that was a big, ooh, we caught you out.
But it is a big deal. I mean, we haven't caught you out if you admit it, but it's good that you admit that there were mistakes, because nobody believes you handled this as well as you could as a government. Nobody does, right?
But there was so much good out of his speech, and so much that made sense, and so much to show that proper action is being taken and things are being done. It's just like, you know, why focus on the negative? It's just, that's what the media does.
I agree with you. The media have really not covered themselves in glory in any of this, but neither has Cyril. And I'm not giving either of them sympathy, frankly, at this point. Neither of them deserve it. The media for constantly lying and looking for negatives. And they do. The mainstream media is full of lies. And Cyril for just sitting on his hands for like 24 hours while people were being threatened and their businesses burnt and, you know, looting and rioting and stupidity happening in very important places where we rely on infrastructure countrywide, the reliance is on the infrastructure of these regions. So I just think, you know, I don't feel sorry for him like you do. Sorry.
Oh, no, I don't feel sorry for him. And I was just listening to it and using my own brain instead of having the media tell me what to think or highlight what I need to take out of this whole speech.
But please.
And then the thing that they told me to highlight in my brain was
the mistake part.
And I was like, come on, guys.
But please don't feel sorry for politicians. They offer to put themselves in that job. This guy is a billionaire already. He's doing it purely for his own glory and satisfaction. I don't believe for a minute that he's an altruist or that he's trying to save South Africa or he cares about you and me and all the other citizens. Politicians are all in it for themselves. I don't trust them. My starting point, my default setting is I don't trust them. Sorry.
What kind of person, you should always be skeptical of politicians, because what kind of person would take a low-paying job that is thankless? So already, if you get into politics, we should already be suspicious of you. It's what my aunt always used to tell me.
Yeah.
It's like, just these people are in it for five-year cycles for themselves. And I'm sorry, go and work. You know what? If you want, nobody's ever going to say anything. Go work at a bank teller, because then we won't comment on you. Yeah. Don't politics if you don't want us having an opinion all the time, every day, because it's your job. Make sure that everything works.
Right. You wanted.
We need a state.
Nobody forced you to be a politician. You offered because you thought you were a leader. So let's see you lead. Go on. And don't expect anything but criticism from me. I'm not going to be waving the flag for you. Sorry. Let other fools do that for you. Other people who can take up their time trying to protect your reputation. North Korea has warned young people about using slang from the South. You know, North Korea very concerned about. I mean, this is a country where you basically have to make sure that your dog's mate so you can have a hot meal by Friday.
You've all got to have the same haircut.
You have to have the same haircut. These people are starving. They're in absolute abject poverty. It's a disastrous regime. They spend whatever spare capital they have either on making Kim Jong-un's life more luxurious or building nuclear weapons, which they keep firing into the sea because the rockets don't work properly. And this state has the temerity to tell its citizens, we don't like the slang that you use from the South of Korea. You know, we are, North Korea is best Korea. So
why is the slang that the South Koreans use ending up in the ears of the North Koreans? Surely their ears are blocked from every outside.
Well, they try,
input.
They try to seal it off. But here's what they said. I'll tell you what happens. First of all, if you use any of the fashion or hairstyles or music or slang from South Korea.
Oopsie.
If you do any of that, do you know what they do? They put you in jail, or you could even be executed. Yes, executed. This is a serious country. The ideological and cultural penetration under the colorful signboard of the bourgeoisie is even more dangerous than enemies who are taking guns, this article in their newspaper newspaper in North Korea read. The North has recently sought to stamp out Korean slang. For example, a woman calling her husband Opa, which means older brother, but is often used to refer to a boyfriend. Foreign influence is seen as a threat to North Korea's communist regime and its supreme leader, Kim Jong-un, and his grip on power. He recently labeled K-pop as a vicious cancer. Look, there I agree with him. I mean...
Or one might say that's just any pop there, Kim Jong. That's not just you. Selena Gomez is
particularly
enough
K-pop. But anyone caught with large amounts of media from South Korea, the United States, or Japan now faces the death penalty. Those caught facing watching it face prison camp for 15 years. Isn't communism just marvelous, everybody? Let's just take a second again to think about how great communism is. And for all those people who still think that socialism has some value and some merit, I'd like to refer you to our friends in Cuba, as if our North Korean example this morning isn't enough. Just how many things are happening in Cuba at the moment that give you an indication that that regime has completely failed, and yet there are still people in the Western world who will defend the Cuban regime. There are actual organizations and individuals like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Black Lives Matter, the organization in the United States, who are saying it's not the communist regime of Cuba that's the problem, it's American sanctions that are the problem. And yet, here is all the proof you need. In which direction are most of the boats going? Are they leaving from Miami, sick and tired of capitalism, ready to try some new communism in Cuba? I mean, you laugh at me, but this is the truth. Where is
it? It's so true.
In which direction is all the net immigration? In which direction does it take place? Because that is all you need to know. If people are willing to get on an inner tractor tire tube and paddle their way to Miami because Cuba is so absolutely shit, what does that tell you about communism for the umpteenth time?
Yeah.
And why in North Korea are South Koreans not clamoring to get through the demilitarized zone into North Korea, the paradise of Kim Jong-un? Why is all the escaping and running and being shot in the back happening from the North trying to get into the South if communism is so marvelous? Why do we even have this argument with idiots anymore?
Thankfully. You know, it would be sensational. I would love it if, well, I wouldn't love it, but if Kim Jong is just sitting there and all of his sort of officials are processing everyone that goes to prison with a Samsung tablet, wouldn't that just be amazing? Yeah.
It's
like bring South Korea's technology to keep them out.
Well, they probably will
have a tablet, a Samsung tablet at the door, and you'll check in there
as you check in.
And by the way, drive in their truck.
Again, like most communist regimes, I think most of their actual paperwork is done on stone tablets with chisels because they're very advanced. We'll leave that for the moment. All right, so many things to talk about this morning, but it is time for something that I think has become a staple for many of us. Dr. Hanan Bushkin is here with It's Going to Be Okay. That is true, right? Still now, I'm just checking. Hanan, it hasn't changed. It is still going to be okay, right? After last week
Absolutely.
And everything we saw. Because when we had you on last week, there wasn't yet that much evidence of all of the violence, the looting, the terror that took place for so many people in KZN and parts of Gauteng. So I thought we'd check in this morning on your mental health with Dr. Hanan. And this week we delve into the psychology behind some of the looting and the repercussions for those who were involved against their will, especially, you know, kids and what you tell them about what's going on in the news, because kids are not stupid. They can see what's happening. So I'm going to start off, Dr. Hanan, if you don't mind, with a Facebook update that was given by Lauren. So Lauren had this to say on Facebook, and I'm just going to put it on the screen. She said, I just watched a video clip on ENCA where a man in Durban was being interviewed about why he was looting. He said he's always followed the rules. He has never done something criminal like this before. He has been unemployed for some time, but he has never felt as free as he does now in the frenzy of looting. Is this as clear-cut as we believe? And maybe that's a great place to start. So what do you think of all of this, and what's the mentality? What's the thought process that goes, first of all, through a looter's head, and second of all, how the rest of us feel about society and civilization around us falling to pieces?
So, yeah, it's been a really tough week. You just had to turn on the TV or the radio, and every conversation to be had is about was about, like, you know, this country, you know, falling apart and the system being broken and the looting and the stealing and what are we going to do and how are we going to do it. The thing about the mob mentality, that's the real thing. You know, you get some really good people, just people, people that want to follow the law, but within the group mentality, with the group psychology, they just get sucked into this wave. Because something really interesting happens once people are sucked into a group. A couple of things actually happen. One of the things that we call de-individuation. When people are part of the group, they experience a loss of self-awareness. You know, when you are, when it's almost like when you're drunk and you're at the club, like suddenly who you are and what you're about just disappears. And suddenly it's about the music and it's about the vibe and it's about other people. The other thing that happens in group, within group mentality or group psychology, is that when you're a part of the group, individuals lose their sense of individual identity. Suddenly it's not me, Hanan, the father, me, Hanan, the husband, me, Hanan, the psychologist. It's actually I take on the identity of the group. And if the group is looting, that becomes part of my identity. I get sucked into that, and that's real. Obviously, within also group mentality, emotions are very high. And we know what happens once people feel deep, deep, deep emotions. So people do crazy things when they're angry, and people do crazy things when they're sad. And people do crazy things when they're insecure, that later on when they're calm and in control, they go, I can't believe I actually did that. But when emotions are high, people are actually just lose their part of the brain. You know, this we call this the prefrontal cortex.
Yes.
The prefrontal cortex is designed to actually regulate our behavior. And we know from scans that once emotions are high, the prefrontal cortex actually shuts down. There's no logical thought. Later on, when we calm down, then we go, we kind of connect the dots and go, I can't actually believe that I did that. Also, within a group mentality, there's a loss of identity, and you become anonymous. You kind of get sucked into the group. So it's not me as an individual, but I get lost in a group. So if we get punished, or I don't get punished, we all get punished, but I'm just a little drop in the ocean.
Yeah, you're one cog in the huge big wheel. So,
exactly,
so can you explain to me, because clearly, I mean, there's nothing that has been done by a mob that's been really good in the history of humanity. Mobs usually do tremendous amount of damage because of that loss of individuality and of personal responsibility. I mean, we prize those things in society. We always look to people who have the maximum amount of accountability as being the ones who keep civilization together. How do we get people to stop using that reptile brain that makes you feel part of a feeding frenzy, which is exactly what happens when you throw meat into a pit of crocodiles, right? I mean, that's exactly what it is. They're lizards. They lose their morality, their sense of self, their individuality, their sense of responsibility, all those things you've just detailed, because the prefrontal cortex gets short-circuited and the reptile brain takes over. Now, how do we get the reptile brain switched off again and take control of ourselves and do the right thing? Because I don't think I am exceptional. I don't think I'm special. I don't think I have any power that other people don't have. But I've never been part of a mob, a riot, a protest group. And when I've – even you were talking about the club situation earlier when people are drunk together, I still don't feel – like I've completely surrendered my individuality. Surely it's a bad thing to do that, Dr. Hanan. How do we get back from that place?
You know, even though the term mob has got some, it's got a negative connotation, we can do some amazing things as a mob. Think about even the cleanup that was going on. And as a mob, people just got together and started taking their identity. And that's good. That's good when you get part
of
a group.
It's not always
that bad. It's not always bad at all. You can use it for the good, but your question was valid. How do we stop the reptilian brain from kicking in, and how do we actually function with good? Well, two things. One, you have to stop functioning on autopilot. You've got to actually start being aware of the world around you and ask yourself whether what you're doing is good. But I always encourage people to be led by a common vision. Never lose track of your vision. You know, the number one question that I ask that people don't have an answer to is, what do you want? Mm. What do you want? And it's kind of interesting because people kind of function on autopilot. And in essence, nothing really has, in its true sense, nothing really is good or bad. So if somebody says to me, I just had a whole chocolate cake. Is that good or bad? The answer is, I have no idea. What do you want? Because if the vision is to lose weight, then that was wrong. And if the vision was to enjoy every minute of your existence, then that was pretty good. So things only are good or bad depending on the vision, on the goal. So be led by a goal and a vision that's very good and pure. But for that, we need a leader. We need a common leader that will say, there's the true north. But the problem with the mob mentality, especially in a negative sense, is you're being led by a so-called leader, even though it's a really an invisible one. It's a mob mentality. It's a common mob direction that is leading you towards the bad. But find a leader. And by the way, if there's nobody outside, find a common vision within you that is your true north.
Well, I mean, there are lots of questions that come out of this. The freedom of going against the laws of society, issues of desperation, frustration, need to regain some sort of power. I also think there have been a lot of people trying to make excuses for mob behavior in the last little while, which irritates me. First of all, because they don't have a mandate from that mob. Many of the people who are trying to explain this away by using arguments from inequality or arguments about poverty or arguments about what criminality really is and are poor people genuinely ever able to be criminal. All of these people have probably never even met any one of the people in that mob of looters. And yet they jump to their defense immediately. They have some kind of cooked up political argument, ideological argument for this. I'm amazed.
Right, you know,
yeah?
You know, I was... people the whole weekend were asking me questions. What do we do? How do you understand this group mentality or this mob mentality? And the common thing that I hear a lot is, oh, no, I don't have an issue with poor people stealing food. And I'm like, I think we've lost
so
kind of our sense of direction.
It's so patronizing. How can you say that about poor people? Who do you think you are that you're better than them, that you can give them a different standard than you give yourself? And how full of yourself do you have to be to say that?
Completely. And to say just poor people steal, I mean, yeah. What happened now in government? What happened to the 500 billion rand? I mean, those people were not poor. So to say poor people steal, it's so stigmatizing and judgmental towards, I mean, you know, people are good and people are bad. And some things, like sometimes we get sucked into a world that we don't actually intend on getting sucked into. But be conscious. Be conscious of what is guiding you, what's your true north.
All right, now let's talk about people who have been a little bit or a lot traumatized by what's happened this week. I know somebody who, she was sitting at the window with her kids, and there were, you know, thousands of people walking past with traditional weapons and screaming and shouting. Some of them were drunk. Some of them were breaking stuff, setting things on fire. And she has been very seriously and genuinely traumatized by this. Her kids also have seen what's been going on. Kids pick up on things, right, Dr. Hanan? Kids know when there's something going on in the neighborhood. Kids know when there's something in the news. They've all been exposed to this coronavirus stuff for such a long time now that they're already antsy. And kids are going into themselves because they're worried that the world around them is falling apart because the adults around them are constantly talking about how the world's falling apart. What are the long-term implications of this, and what advice do you have for people who are trying to keep sensible and sane during a particularly trying time?
Right. So, you know, we all want our brain really functions well when it feels in control. The moment we feel that we don't know what's coming up next, then the brain almost short circuits. It needs to find that sense of control, that 1 + 1 = 2. To all parents, I want to give you an analogy. Imagine you are sitting at the back of the plane. You're flying wherever, and there's crazy, crazy turbulence. Imagine the captain comes on the speaker and is freaking out. We're going to die. How are you going to feel at the back of the plane? Or imagine the captain doesn't come up on the speaker at all. You're going to be like, well, you're going to create monsters in your head. Are we going to die? So you are, as parents, the captains of your children's flight. Now, the mistake that parents make, twofold. One, they don't speak up where there's turbulence happening in their children's lives and their children create monsters in their head. And, oh my God, what's going to happen next? Mm-hmm. Are we going to get hurt? Are we going to die? Or the second thing that parents do as the analogy of the plane is they go, there's nothing to see. Nothing to see. Nothing to see. Don't look outside the window. You're imagining things. And in essence, what they're doing is they're gaslighting their own kids. Because their kids feel it. We see it. we we're not blind to what's happening around us.
Smart.
So to turn to your kids and go, there's nothing to see, only freaks them out even more. Obviously, depending on the age of the child and their maturity level, you would actually explain to the children what are going on. Of course, you wouldn't tell a four-year-old, you know, they're bad people stealing from shops. But maybe somebody that's a little bit older and a little mature that can actually understand and piece it together, you would be much more verbal and much more expressive. So explain to your kids, the worst thing that a parent, one of the bad things or the worst thing that a parent can do is not make 1 + 1 = 2 for their kids. Give your kids enough information to close the loop to make sense of their world. Now, how do you know when you haven't? When your kids come back with more questions. When your kids stop asking you questions, then you know you've closed the loop. Because let me tell you something. If you don't close the loop for your kids, Google will. Their best friend will. Oof. Their friend of friend, their friends of friends of friends, and social media and TikTok will. So you better close the loop for them so TikTok doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, Andre makes exactly that point. He says these poor kids, some parents just shove a screen in their face to cope.
Yeah, distraction. And what that does, it just kind of takes their focus away from the turbulence. But when they come back to the turbulence, it's the same questions.
Well, in theory, it says we don't do our kids any favors by lying to them. Honesty in terms they understand is better.
100%.
Yeah, Leanne, you wanted to say something. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, it's I don't have kids, and I don't have many children in my family, so I often don't think about it's not top of mind for me what's going on in their heads. But what you've described, Dr. Hanan, is very much what goes on in my own head. There are certain things that I have to close the gaps on information that's missing. Otherwise, I will develop this crazy story in my head, and it'll be 10 times worse. You know, I judged myself for going onto TikTok and going onto the news and watching the videos of looting that were going on. And I thought, you know, am I being sensationalist or sensationalist seeking? No, I'm not actually. I'm preventing those monstrous stories from growing in my head. I'm showing myself what the reality is. I'm saying, right, this is what's out there. Now I can deal with it mentally. It was a similar situation when I found a deceased family member, and I wasn't able to, you know, look at them after I'd discovered their body. I'm sorry if this is really grim. But in retrospect, I wanted my cousin, who's a doctor and who did examine the body, to explain to me what he looked like, because I was creating this other huge story in my head of how awful he must have looked when he didn't. Or he did, and then I could deal with it.
For sure, for sure. And Leanne, what I would say to you and the people that are watching the news is that, of course, we get sucked into that world because we want to make sense of it. We want somebody to close the loop. But the problem is, the more you watch it, the more loops open. Suddenly you went from 1 + 1 to 1 + 2 / 7 times whatever. And suddenly it's even more confusing. So watch as much as you need to in order to protect yourself. And then beyond that, focus your attention on things that you can control.
Yeah,
absolutely. If you have your wits about you, you can feel when you're reaching that point where you're watching too much.
Very much so.
When you've seen enough and one video starts to look like the next, that's probably a warning sign.
That's about being conscious, sure, conscious of what you're engaging in.
Absolutely.
Dr. Hanan,
go ahead, Bulala, and then we've got to wrap it up. Sorry, we're running into seven. Go ahead.
Just one question quickly is, do you think, is there any evidence, and I'm not asking you to be a prognosticator here, I'm not going to hold you to this forevermore, but do you think there's any chance that we're going to move forward and people might actually think harder about having children? Because now we kind of know that this is possible, right? As South Africans, I'm just talking about South Africa, is that as South Africans, we haven't really seen this since sort of 94, 97, until that sort of period in our history. Do you think people might have to, will, us middle-class people will think hard about having kids because of moments like this, which has been such an interesting thing for me because of kids getting traumatized, or do you think we'll just get back to normal?
So, Valelo, you know, it's a good question. I was listening to the show earlier on, and Gareth was quite right in terms of when in the history have we ever been stable and safe? You know, it doesn't exist. We have moments where we feel in control, But then we go through our ups and then we go through our downs, and that's life. That's the cycle of life. So to stop yourself from having kids because things are tough, well, I'm not too sure when then anybody will have kids.
I mean,
stable doesn't exist as a state.
People were having kids in the middle of the Black Death in the Middle Ages. They knew that the chances are the kids would be born and die virtually a couple of days later. But they still did it. Survival, man.
For sure.
Survival. Dr. Hanan, thank you so much. We will catch up with you again in another week. And you can always listen to the podcast from previous episodes. And by the way, if you have anything that you'd like us to talk to Dr. Hanan about, maybe you've got a personal situation that you'd like him to unpack and help you with, and in so doing, the rest of us can gain some useful information and knowledge, then please let us know. That's all you have to do. Gareth@cliffcentral.com. Good morning.
CliffCentral.com.